3 o'clock hour of the Burns and Gambo show on this Friday edition. Hope everyone is getting set for a fantastic weekend. If you're just joining us, or if you haven't heard quite yet, there will be no Arizona Cardinal preseason game this weekend. It was supposed to be a 5 o'clock kickoff Arizona time tomorrow. That got moved to 10 a.m. Arizona, and then within the last 30 minutes or so, the game has been outright canceled due to the oncoming Hurricane Ida in the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah, Hurricane Ida to be catastrophic Category 4 storm affecting most of the Louisiana Gulf Coast. That's what they're thinking is right now, as this is expected to, you know, begin sometime late tomorrow, but the real effects will be on Sunday.
Not a big deal in terms of the football roster decisions that need to be made for the Arizona Cardinals. As you have outlined earlier this week, a lot of those key questions, for the most part, have already been answered. And so there wasn't a whole lot to be playing for. And Kyler Murray wasn't going to be playing in that game anyways. That was already made by Cliff Kingsbury, that decision made the other day. That leads into this piece that I found on theringer.com today, and it's headlined, Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray are running out of time to produce fireworks. And the subheadline, the vaunted air raid offense has turned into the horizontal raid, and now the supposedly electric duo in Arizona faces a make-or-break season.
Make-or-break season for how old's Kyler Murray?
What, 24?
This is it. At 24 years old, I mean, he just turned 24 a couple weeks ago, too. Make a break. Can't do this by at 24. You're going to... Sometimes this stuff is... It's a little overblown, a little out of proportion.
Hyperbolic.
It's a make-or-break year for Kyler Murray. Listen, there's a lot of pressure on everybody and every team to win. I mean, everybody's got the pressure. The Cardinals' pressure is no different than a lot of the other teams' pressures right now. To win football games, to get your team to the playoffs, to have success. There's a lot of money being paid out. There's a lot of expectations on a lot of teams. But we'll focus it here on Arizona. Yeah, it's a big year for Cliff Kingsbury. Do I think that it's playoffs or bust? I've said this before. I think there's a gray area there. I don't think it's an absolute that Cliff gets fired. If they go 9-8 and they lose out on a tiebreaker, I don't think, like, fire the coach. But that's where everybody likes to fire the coach. It's the number one thing. Fire the coach. It's the coach's fault. Let's, you know, if they win 9 football games and they miss the playoffs on a tiebreaker, I don't think I'll be sitting there saying fire the coach.
This was a long piece. It was on The Ringer, so it's always a long piece. But the general crux is stuff that we've already talked about, we've already discussed. And one of the main themes was that the improvement Cliff Kingsbury has made with the offense. And one of the knocks that they bring up in this article against that idea is that in that 2018 season, when it was Josh Rosen and it was Steve Wilks, that was the second worst season by an offense, according to Football Outsiders' DVOA stat. So heavy analytics here.
Okay.
But based off of that,
okay,
that Josh Rosen season was the second worst season by an offense since 1983.
It was bad.
So
remember who the offensive coordinator was?
Well, for half a season, it was Mike McCoy.
And then they got rid of him. Was it Leftwich?
Leftwich finished it out.
It was that bad that they had to fire the offensive coordinator in the middle of the damn season, because the offense couldn't move a football.
Who was in his first season?
I mean, that whole coaching staff was really, it was not a good coaching staff. Wilks was gone after a year. The offensive coordinator didn't even make it a year.
So the argument that they make is that, yes, Cliff Kingsbury analytically has improved the Cardinals' offense in his time here in Arizona, but it started at such a dumpster level situation that it was hard for it would have been difficult for anyone not to improve that offense from where they were taking over.
And that's true, right? I mean, you're starting at a 3-win football team but there was like gigantic improvements in the offense under Cliff. It wasn't like minuscule. It was like big improvements with the offense.
They highlighted it that at one point, if you go back into last season, the Cardinals were averaging the most yards of any team in the offense. And it all kind of came down to once Kyler Murray injured his shoulder and things kind of went out the window. In this piece, they bring up that it was the New England Patriots who kind of figured out how to defend the Arizona offense by putting at least 5 defensive backs on the field to contend Arizona's speed with your own speed. And ever since that point, it kind of was
other
the blueprint
that,
to the other teams.
That's what we have to do. We got to play more defensive backs, and that's where – you know, that's where Kugler comes in. You want to be committed to running the football. You want to swing it out to those running backs. You want to have some 2 tight end sets. I think, you know, Listen, I feel really good that Isabella is going to make the roster. I feel really good that Josh Jones is going to start. The tight end thing is the one thing I'm still trying to figure out. Are they going to add Zach Ertz? Are they going to add another tight end? Are they going to wait to see if there's somebody else out there they can add? I mean, it hasn't been it was an okay weapon with Dan Arnold last year. It was an okay weapon. Do they want the tight end to be more of a weapon for them or not? I mean, we'll see. I love their wide receivers. I mean, I think they have four guys that can really get after it with A.J. Green and DeAndre and Kirk and Rondale Moore. So I really like, if they want to go four wide receivers at times, I think that they've got a dynamic gift of wide receivers that can really, really hurt teams. But you're right, if a team's got five defensive backs in it, you got to find a way to punish them by running the football.
Another thing that was brought up in this Ringer.com article that I thought was fascinating was looking at the types of pass plays that Kyler Murray has thrown so far in his Cardinal career. And there's no question that if you've watched this team at all, you know that the short passing game is a huge part of a Cliff Kingsbury offense. But Kyler Murray, so far in his first 2 years, has, out of all of the passes that he's thrown, only 11.5% of all of his passes have been 20 yards or more downfield.
Yeah, they got to take more shots down the field. And I think that you'll get that now with the speed you get with Rondale, with AJ's size and his speed. He still looks quick out there. So I think that will go up quite a bit. I think they'll take some more of those. Look, you got to have some of those passes. You got to keep defenses honest. You got to see, but you've got guys now. You know, Fitz wasn't beating anybody down the field.
No.
And DeAndre was one-on-one. And Isabella, they didn't trust last year a whole lot. So when you start to look at Christian Kirk has been good, but he hasn't really broke out. So I don't think that they had the opportunities. And now I feel like their offensive line is in the best shape it's been in. I mean, adding Rodney Hudson is huge. Last year, they had a big hole at center. Now they've cleared that up with one of the best centers in the league. I think time for Kyler is going to be important in trying to make some of those big plays down the field.
I mean, based off of Pro Football Focus grades, Mason Cole was one of the worst-rated centers in the NFL.
He's terrible. Absolutely terrible.
And you're jumping from one of the worst
to one of the best,
a top five, top ten center of that position. So talking through this, going back to the general idea, a make-or-break season for Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray. It's not a make-it-or-break-it season for Kyler Murray. You have already said, and I think it's a very astute point, that even if Kingsbury is fired, they're not switching quarterbacks. I mean, we're talking about a two-time Pro Bowl quarterback who is young, who is controllable with his contract. The Cardinals are not getting rid of Kyler.
And the way I kind of envisioned it, right, if they decide to move on from Cliff, if they have a bad year and they move on from Cliff, and they bring in Michael Bidwell, and if Steve Keim's still here as the GM, and they bring somebody in to interview, the first question they're going to ask him is, what are you going to do to take Kyler Murray to the next level? And if that guy says, oh, man, I can't work with a quarterback that's 5'10", he's not getting the job.
Yeah.
So, like, your answer better be, here's what I would do with Kyler. You better come in with a game plan on what you're going to do to get Kyler Murray to be an elite quarterback in this league. Because they're not moving on from Kyler.
Yeah, so to me, the bigger question is not if Kyler and Cliff are in this make-it-or-break-it season. Is it Cliff and Keim in a make-it-or-break-it season? And based off of everything that we talked about in this segment, if Kingsbury doesn't work out, now, this is not including injuries. That's unpredictable. That's unforeseen. You can't make that type of prediction. But if everything stays healthy, Cliff Kingsbury has been given a very beautiful tool set. I mean, we have A.J. Green, DeAndre Hopkins. You have Rodney Hudson. You bring in James Conner as a second running back option. Kyler, I mean, the pieces are there on offense now that if Cliff can't put this together, I mean,
yeah, the toolbox is full.
It's not on Steve Keim.
No,
and I've been critical of Steve Keim. I mean, in what he has done with his draft situations over the years, this seems to be, as we've yet to play a real NFL game, this has the hope of a draft class that might hit. But it's not like I'm a Steve Keim apologist, but if it doesn't work out with this group, that's more on Cliff Kingsbury than it is Steve Keim. And I would think that it's also going to be more on Kingsbury than Kyler Murray as well.
You know, listen, I think that there's a feeling that the roster that was put together this year is a good roster and they should win a lot of football games. Now, if they don't, somebody's got to bear the brunt of that, right? Somebody's got to be to blame. Do you blame the GM? Do you blame the coach? Do you blame both? We'll have to see how it plays out, right? You have to see how it plays out. But if you're Cliff, you're right. I mean,
it's all dependent on how it, you're right, on how it plays out.
How does it play out?
If A.J. Green and J.J. Watt and Rodney Hudson are healthy and they play terribly, then that could be chalked up potentially to Steve Keim. But if those guys are producing and the team is still not translating that type of production into wins, then it's more on Cliff.
Or if those guys all get injured, if you get a bunch of guys that you brought in that were older and they get injured, it's like, oh, okay. Took a chance on some older guys that didn't pan out. So I think they're in a good spot. I think that no matter what, I don't think like a 24 years old, I don't think this is the be-all end-all for Kyler.
Text us your thoughts on the Arizona Cardinals and what may or may not be that make or break season for Cliff Kingsbury. You can do so by texting the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. Coming up next, the Arizona Diamondbacks are in Philadelphia getting square to stay perfect against the Phillies. But there was also a roster shakeup today with a veteran player. Is this the sign that the youth movement is officially underway? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
The home of Arizona Diamondbacks baseball is 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. We're checking in on the D-backs as they warm up for the game's first pitch. D-backs on deck, brought to you by Sonic. This is how we Sonic. Stop by your nearest location today for the new Sonic Crave Cheeseburger for a limited time only at Sonic. And by Trajan Wealth. Get your retirement on deck with Trajan Wealth, your local trusted financial fiduciary. TrajanWealth.com.
It is time for D-backs on deck here on the Burns and Gambo Show. As the Diamondbacks remain in Philadelphia as part of a four-game road series with the Phillies, they took the first game last night. It wasn't easy after giving up five runs in the bottom of the ninth. They held on is more the accurate way to describe that game.
All unearned runs.
Yeah. We'll get
errors by Walker and Varshow and a pass ball, and it got ugly. It got ugly in that last inning, but they held on, and they won the game.
I guess you call that progress, right?
I mean,
it got ugly, but you still won, as opposed to it getting ugly and you losing.
Yeah, especially, listen, it's nice to win a one-run game. They've only won like eight of them all year.
Yeah.
They really struggled in one-run games.
And it's also good to see that all of those runs that they gave up didn't come in the seventh and eighth. They came in, the ninth.
Yeah,
they're mixing it up a little bit. We got to look at the positives, Gambo.
That is a positive, Seventh, eighth, and ninth still stinks, though.
We'll get into today's game a little bit later, but there was some roster moves today made by the Arizona Diamondbacks. As Drubal Cabrera was placed on waivers earlier this morning and was quickly picked up by the Cincinnati Reds, that was first reported by John Heyman. In his report, he mentions that this was kind of a do right by Cabrera by allowing him the opportunity to latch on to a playoff team. So he now goes from the worst team in the National League in the Arizona Diamondbacks to a Cincinnati Reds team that is currently two games up for the final wild card spot.
Yeah, there's no reason to hold on to these veteran players that, I mean, he's a 35-year-old guy who isn't a part of your future. There's no reason to play him. I mean, every time you play him, you're taking, you know, precious innings away and at-bats away from a young player who could use that time. So I think it's a big mistake to hang on to guys like that. So moving on from Cabrera, giving him a chance to hook up with somebody else, absolutely the right thing to do.
You mentioned those young players. This probably means we're going to see more time of Drew Ellis.
Yes.
Van Meter, those younger guys.
Yeah, Cabrera played some third base. He played some first base. I mean, in the past, he's played shortstop and second. So he's got a lot of experience. So the Reds manager, David Bell, says, look, we've seen him play a lot over the years. He's just a good, solid baseball player, great at bats. Both sides of the plates, I think he'll really strengthen our bench. He'll get opportunities to start games, of course, mainly playing the corners. But he's a 35-year-old guy batting .244. I mean, what is, you know, he wasn't adding anything to the Arizona Diamondbacks. Play the young guys. Let's see Drew Ellis over an extended period of time.
Well, speaking of young guys, in the corresponding roster move, the Diamondbacks today called up outfielder Jake McCarthy from AAA Reno. He was the 39th overall pick in the 2018 MLB draft. So there was a few days ago, Burnsy and yourself were talking about Torey Lovello saying they're going to take the youth movement to the next level.
Yes.
We're seeing it. We're in the midst of it right now.
I still want to see Seth Beer, the guy they got in the Astros trade for Greinke, right? So I do want to see him get an opportunity. Josh Rojas has been really good. I mean, Varshow outside of dropping that ball last night, I like what I've seen out of him. I do like Pavin Smith. We had Christian Walker on the show earlier, but he's, you know, he's 30, and I don't think he's the future. I think he could be a nice role player, but I want to see, you know, Pavin get those opportunities to play first base. It's got to be a commitment to the youth movement for them, absolutely.
The other thing out of last night's game, before we look ahead and preview today's game with the Phillies, Ketel Marte left last night's game with a right hip discomfort.
He's not going to play today, but he's day-to-day. I checked in with the Diamondbacks this morning, They think he's fine. He'll be okay. He's just going to list him as day-to-day, but he's not playing today.
To that point, Torrey Lovello pregame today said that Marte would be available off the bench if need be for tonight's game. So that at least is a positive sign. But, man, it seems like Marte has not been able to catch a break all season long.
No, I mean, he's just a guy that, you know, you just worry about that part of Marte. I mean, he's had some injuries in his career. He's playing really well when he plays, but he missed a lot of time this year with the hamstring injury, and that's two separate stints on the injured list because of that. So, you know, that's the thing you worry about with Ketel Marte. But damn, when he plays, he has played really well.
Well, yeah, I mean, as of late, he's been on fire. I mean, in the last couple of games, he's, I think he was been batting in the 400 range. His average for the season is 348, but he's just been so inconsistent with being able to stay in that lineup long term. Looking ahead to tonight's game, or I should say this afternoon's game for the Arizona Diamondbacks and the Philadelphia Phillies, it's time now for our pitching matchup. When the game is on the line and you've been injured, nobody matches up to the Berg Simpson Law Firm. Visit BergSimpson.com. That's B-U-R-G Simpson.com. Good lawyers changing lives. The pitching matchup today, Taylor Widener for the Arizona Diamondbacks. He will be facing Aaron Nola for Philadelphia.
Yeah, Widener's one of those guys. He's got a 4.34 ERA. He's got 60 strikeouts. He's got a 2-1 record. But he did some damage to the Phillies last time around. He held them to only two hits and one run. So he pitched very well against them. They've got the Phillies' number. I mean, they've had Philadelphia's number. They're 4-0 against Philadelphia. And the Phillies are fighting for their lives to try to stay in playoff contention. But the Diamondbacks have done some real damage to them.
Speaking of trying to stay in playoff contention, it's time now to take a look at the MLB standings. Brought to you by PNC Bank, financial tools and tech to help make things easier for you. In that National League wildcard race right now, Philadelphia, six games back of the aforementioned Cincinnati Reds. And if you're a Philly fan or a member of that team in general, you just have to be chewing your hat to shreds that losing these games to the Diamondbacks has played a significant factor in you trying to really contend for that wild card spot.
Reese Hoskins out of the lineup has really just hurt them because they don't have protection for Harper there, and all these other guys are really struggling. So, and their farm system hasn't really developed. There's a lot of stories out there about how, you know, they just don't have the guys to come up, I mean, and contribute for them. So their farm system has really let them down.
So they have a couple of teams to climb ahead of them. St. Louis, 4.5 back of the second wild card. San Diego, two games back, which you think that San Diego eventually here is going to wake up and start to play to the caliber that they're capable of and maybe start to push Cincinnati for that second wild card spot. So we're about 30 minutes or so away from first pitch in Philadelphia. Let's get you some keys to today's game.
Listen, man, I need you to be the key master.
I am the key master.
D-backs keys to the game, brought to you by Sell2Sands. Take away the hassle of selling a vehicle yourself. Go to Sell2Sands.com today.
Well, here's the key for Taylor Widener. Since Hoskins went on the injured list, Realmuto's hitting 182 with 16 strikeouts. McCutcheon 6-for-45, batting 133 with 17 strikeouts. Gene Segura is struggling. All of these players are struggling. The one guy in the lineup you want to stay away from is Bryce Harper. He had a big hit for them yesterday. Had a nice catch in the first inning as well. So if I'm Taylor Widener, I could pitch around Bryce Harper to attack these other hitters.
Speaking of yesterday's game, I really dig the uniforms the Phillies were wearing.
Those
70s powder blues?
Yeah.
That was a good look.
Listen, that was, boy, I remember a lot of those teams, right? Larry Boa and Greg Luzinski and Nino Espinosa and Bake McBride And Bob Boone was the catcher, Pete Rose at third base, at first, Mike Schmidt at third, I think it was Matty Trejo.
Where's Tug McGraw
Tug McGraw was one of the closers. I remember Bob Walk. I remember a lot of those. Steve Carlton. I remember those Phillies very, very well. The Bull, Greg Luzinski. Yeah, it's
good-looking vintage uniforms they were rocking last night. Once again,
Larry Boa.
The first pitch of today's game, it is a 4:05 start. You can hear that game on ESPN 620. Taylor Widener for Arizona up against Aaron Nola of the Philadelphia Phillies. Coming up next here on the Burns and Gambo Show, we are starting to see how the new alliance in college football is actually going to look like. In terms of scheduling, it could have a significant impact on the Pac-12 and ASU. We'll explain next here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Welcome back into the Burns and Gambo show. Alongside Gambo, Jordan Bird filling in for Dave Burns on this Friday edition. Hope everyone's getting set for a nice weekend that will now no longer feature an Arizona Cardinals preseason game. As you heard Sarah mention in the update, that game has been canceled due to Hurricane Ida coming in and hitting New Orleans over the weekend. But college football begins tomorrow. And they're actually, I'm not a Big Ten fan at all. I find it I find it a boring brand of football.
Oh, ouch.
I mean, it's old school in my mind.
And you don't like old school?
I don't.
You want wide open offenses and games of 70 to 60? And
I do. I liked it when college was the full-on air raid and kind of the circus offenses. Then
you don't like the Woody Hayes, Bo Schembechler matchups?
It really distinguished the difference between college football and NFL football. The NFL football is more what the Big Ten plays, and I can appreciate, or what they used to. The NFL now has started to trend more towards the college game. But I liked how 10 years ago, other conferences besides the Big Ten, it was kind of this freewheeling attitude, and it wasn't, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. To me, that's what the Big Ten is. But my whole point is, I'm pumped up for 10 a.m. tomorrow. Wisconsin and Illinois, a Big Ten game right out of the gates, is on the schedule to kick off the college football season.
Got to watch that first game.
Got
to watch that first game to get into it.
Exactly. I mean, and to now have crowds back and to have the marching bands and all of the pageantry that comes along with college football, I'm really excited about it tomorrow.
Yeah, I think all eyes right now are on the Big 12 and possible expansion. There was some stories today about them possibly adding BYU to the Big 12. And then, you know, no news coming out today about the Pac-12, that the Pac-12 may look to start this scheduling as early as next year with these, you know, home and home, home wouldn't be home and home. What would you call
it? Yeah, it's being kind of phrased as a home and home.
Wouldn't be the same team. So home and home would be the same team.
Well, but you haven't, not getting too much into the semantics, basically you would have one home game, one road game.
Against the conference.
Against alliance conferences, which is the Pac-12, the Big Ten, and the ACC.
Yeah, the Big Ten and Pac-12 are interested in cutting their conference schedules from 9 to 8 as soon as next year, said George Kliavkov, the Pac-12 commissioner. They want to schedule that pact starting right away with the ACC, starting in the 2022 season. So Kliavkov made these comments. They're at a visit to Washington State today that they want to get this conference, they want to get this scheduling going immediately.
So the idea here is you go from 9 conference games to 8, which now frees you up to have 4 non-conference games.
So you can still have your 2 kind of patsies, because you got to, like, that supports a lot. You know this. You went to NAU. How much money does NAU make when they play ASU or U of A?
It's probably one of the largest contributions to their athletic budget.
They have to have it. So there's a lot of those schools that, listen, I'll go get my ass kicked and I'll take that payday of $750,000 because I need it.
Yeah.
So, like, you don't want to do away with those. So I was a little worried about that. But if they reduce the number of conference games and they increase the number of non-conference to 4, they could still have those 2 games against programs like, you know, for Arizona or Arizona State, they could play NAU.
The problem with that is when you look at some of the future schedules. Now, the other thing that the Alliance Conference commissioners have come out and said, that in the name of scheduling amongst each other in the non-conference, they are not going to break or renegotiate any current scheduling contracts that are out there. So if you already have a game on the books for 12 years from now, which a lot of college teams do, they're not trying to change that. And that's where it's problematic for ASU specifically. Looking at their future opponent non-conference, next year, they've got NAU at Oklahoma State, Eastern Michigan. So even if you go one less Pac-12 game, that only leaves room for one of those alliance games.
I mean, could you get out of the Eastern Michigan game?
But I bet that's a pay game for Eastern Michigan.
But just pay them. Pay them to get out of it.
But, okay, let me keep going, because if that's going to be the thought process, it's going to add up quick. Well, I guess it doesn't matter, because you're already paying them to play them. Now you're just paying them not to play. So it probably wouldn't be any extra now that I'm thinking about it through in real time. Any case.
Now it sucks for them, because now they've got a schedule.
Exactly.
They lose a game off their schedule.
But if you're trying to look at the sunny side of things here, if you're Eastern Michigan, maybe you can get a payday from ASU for canceling the game.
And get another payday.
And get another one for whoever you're going to replace them with on your schedule.
Double dip.
In any case, it's not until 2027 where ASU has an open spot on their non-conference, where they could do a home and away with Alliance Conference members.
That's six seasons will pass.
Yeah, as of right
before
now,
they could do that.
2022 through 2026, ASU already has three non-conference games locked up, scheduled on the docket. So, yeah, you may be able to get out of some of these, but
the ACC already plays eight games.
Yeah.
So they're in a position they could probably do this right away, the ACC. The Pac-12 and the Big Ten would have to eliminate it. Now, again, like, here's the problem that I see. If you say, if you're George Clinton, we want to start doing this next year, but only half of our schools could do it. I mean, that's not going
to
work.
Well, maybe they can't. Maybe only half the schools can do it to the full extent of the desired intention of having the home and away. But maybe you can add a road game at Indiana or something like that. And you can do it 50% of the way to start to build that rapport within the alliance. But, yeah, it's good for some of these teams. Now, U of A, on the flip side, they would only have to wait until 2024 before they could have two more additional non-conference games added to their schedule. So, I mean, some of these teams, it's going to depend on what they already have out there. But I feel like the majority of them are more like ASU, where they have locked up their non-conference schedule for the next four, five, six, seven seasons down the road.
No, I mean, listen, there are some ASU games, you know, that are in the 2030s that are scheduled.
2033 on September 10th, ASU is going to play at Texas.
I mean, I don't even know if we, like
that's 12 years from now.
I don't know if I'm going to be alive in 2030. I mean, think about that. 2033?
Well, I said earlier that the kids that are going to be playing in that game, they're 6 years old right now. They're 7 years old right now.
That'll be the age of Sarah's kids. You're going to have 2 6-year-olds running around.
Don't you put that curse on me, Gambo.
Two twins coming. I mean, like in 13 years? 12 years from now?
He's just illustrating the possibilities that could happen within those 12 years. We don't mean to freak you out, Sarah.
Should be our Twitter poll question. How many kids will Sarah have when ASU plays that game?
Make sure to CC her fiancé on that Twitter poll.
Two, three, four, or five kids by that time. No, but you think about, like, how far away that is. Like, where is your life going to be in 12 years?
I mean, yeah, that's the thing. Forget about kids or whatever. Just how much has changed? Go back 12 years from as we stand right now. How much your life has changed in that amount of time. Here's the other thing. With them starting to make these alliances and go deeper and deeper down the road.
So my daughter, who's a doctor now?
Yeah.
She was 13 years old.
Yeah. So what is that? That's, eighth grade?
She's a doctor
or
now.
A freshman in high school?
She was 13 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that just shows you how much can change. And especially in the world of college football, where the possibility of realignment and expansion and all of these different things.
Again.
Of course it is. Here's the real question. 12 years from now, what does the playoff look like? Is it 12 teams? Is it 16 teams?
It's going to take a number of years.
Is it 24 teams?
I don't know. It's not going to be four. That next step will be to go to 12 because you know what? These other conferences, the AAC, they're gonna want a chance.
I want
a chance to play in the playoffs.
If I'm the AAC, the American Athletic Conference,
yeah, it's a good conference.
Right now, I'm screaming from the rooftop. Why is the Big 12 considered still Power 5 and we're not?
I'm thinking because Texas and Oklahoma are still in it.
Well, okay, but once they leave,
the AAC is a better football conference
than the Big 12, the remaining members of the Big 12.
I mean,
yeah.
I would think so. I think it's deeper. I think it's a deeper conference.
Well, okay, and
Cincinnati, I mean, they were in a New Year's Six bowl game last year.
So real quick, you mentioned the BYU thing for Big 12. That doesn't make sense to me because geographically, that's a jaunt to get from Provo, Utah to Morgantown, West Virginia.
That's what they're discussing right now.
Houston?
BYU.
And Cincinnati. Cincinnati's like...
But why would Cincinnati leave the AAC?
To go join the Big 12.
But why?
Because if the AAC is not going to get that designation of being a Power 5, and they're still going to be the redheaded stepchild...
You don't think the Big 12 is going to lose that designation?
I don't know.
The second Texas and Oklahoma leave?
Who knows?
They're not going to have that designation
anymore. They can poach Cincinnati and Houston, or maybe even go into Central Florida or something like that.
The second Texas and Oklahoma bolt, their status of a power conference is done.
Don't forget that you can text Sparky to 620-620 and kick off the college football season with your favorite Arizona sports hosts and a special guest for our Valley Virtual Series presented by 72 Sold, where you can get a higher price. Plus, we will be giving away college football tickets. That's text Sparky to 620-620. Coming up next here on the Burns and Gambo Show, there will be no game tomorrow between the Cardinals and the New Orleans Saints, but New Orleans did make some news earlier today. They named their starting quarterback. We'll take a look around the rest of the NFL coming up next here on 98.7 FM. Welcome back into the Burns and Gambo show. Alongside Gambo, Jordan Bird filling in for Dave Burns.
Ever-vacationing Dave
there
Burns.
There we go.
Yeah, We're back. On September 7th, I'll be back.
Perfect time. We'll be leading right into the Cardinals and Titans coming off the Labor Day weekend.
Titans got a lot of issues right now.
They got a whole bunch
of guys on that COVID list. I think it's just plenty of time for them to get off of this COVID list. But they've got Ryan Tannehill's on the list. I was looking at it today. I mean, it was like seven players.
Seven players, two coaches.
Yeah,
so nine total are in COVID protocols for Tennessee.
Yeah, so tight end Jeff Swaim, linebacker Justin Mock Lillard. They were placed on the reserve list Thursday along with Tannehill. They've got a defensive tackle named Anthony Rush, a running back named Jeremy Nichols, a linebacker, Nick Dunsbar, and Harold Lance. So they've got a bunch of players. Now, again, I mean, they're going to play on September 12th, but you feel like, man, we're getting closer and closer to that date. I mean, it's 2 weeks away now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 2 weeks and 2 days away from having that first game.
Well, and it also makes me wonder, you know, I know we didn't have any games that were straight up outright canceled last year, but there was a lot of maneuvering through the NFL schedule. I mean, what would happen if a team had this type of outbreak or this type of COVID situation?
They'd still be able to play. It's only seven guys.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the type of players. If your head coach and your starting quarterback is out for a regular season game, that's a pretty substantial loss.
So you may lose, but you'll be able to play.
Yeah.
I mean, these rosters are just so big, and you'll be able to call up guys from the practice squad. I'd be surprised if we lost an NFL game this year.
I agree.
I would say that I don't think that we will lose an Now, the NFL also proposed some new rules for testing. The NFL proposed increasing COVID-19 testing for vaccinated players as cases surge around the country. Justin Pugh from the Cardinals, he's right on the money. Because there's many, many vaccinated players that are getting COVID. It's not doing the same damage as if you weren't vaccinated.
Yeah.
But you're still getting it. Like, there's still plenty of people that were vaccinated that are getting COVID. Not to the extent of if, you know, the like going to the hospital, but you're still getting it and you can still pass it along. So Justin Pugh was right on the money when he said we need to have testing for vaccinated players too.
Well, and when he sent that tweet, it was retweeted by Jordan Phillips, who is also now in COVID protocols for the Cardinals. Cliff Kingsbury said yesterday he expects both of those guys back on Monday. But yeah, I mean, that's something that players themselves have been advocating for. Getting out of the COVID world in the NFL, some quarterback news. There will be no Cardinals-Saints game tomorrow. If you're just joining us, that game has been outright canceled due to the incoming Hurricane Ida in the New Orleans area. So no third preseason game for the Cardinals. But before all of that news, the New Orleans Saints did reach a decision on their starting quarterback. It will be Jameis Winston week one.
Yeah, that was a battle that a lot of people weren't sure how that was going to go. You know, Winston is, I mean, everybody knows him from his time in Tampa Bay. He didn't have a lot of success there. He won 28 games and he lost 42. But he threw 121 touchdown passes to 88 interceptions. And I think people thought Hill was going to get the job. But Winston played well enough to where he's going to be the guy in New Orleans. Now, first time in, what, 16 years that Drew Brees is not the starting quarterback for the New Orleans Saints. But they liked what they saw out of Winston. So he's going to get the opportunity to be the starter for the New Orleans Saints.
I think this was the right decision. I mean, I'm no Saints fan. I'm no Saints expert. But it gives you kind of more of a safety net. If you go with Taysom Hill, then if things don't go out that great, you're kind of turning things over and looking at Jameis Winston as the savior. With Taysom Hill, though, you can incorporate him in the offense, even with Jameis Winston being the starter. And if things don't go great with Jameis, then maybe you can turn to the Taysom Hill.
I remember when he was with BA, that one year that he was with BA, or Jameis Winston, and he threw all the, what do you say,
he was the
30 interceptions.
Club. 30 touchdowns and 30 interceptions.
Yeah, and BA would take his shots at him all the time. Like, you know, he just, you can't throw picks.
Yeah.
You can't throw that many picks. So we'll see. If he gets an, you know, he'll get the opportunity. We'll see if he can, you know, really get his career going again with New Orleans.
Another piece of quarterback news, this one pertaining to the NFC West division. There still is question. I think now that Winston's been named the starter, is San Francisco the only job that has yet to be named as a starting quarterback?
Is New England named the starter?
Oh, no, you're right. Yeah, New England, and I think maybe Washington, too. But in any case, we're starting to really get down to a small number here. There has been this idea. Kyle Shanahan has kind of teased it through training camp.
Both guys playing.
That Jimmy G and Trey Lance could both see action.
Probably.
General manager John Lynch doubled down on that today when he joined KNBR Radio in the Bay Area and said, quote, "If we are in a situation like this, then yes, it's going to be difficult for opposing teams to prepare for both quarterbacks. We haven't shown a lot in the preseason as well in terms of the things that we can do with both Trey and Jimmy, but that's not only for us, that's league-wide. You really don't know, going into those first couple of games, what you're going to see out of them. Quote, it is something that we kind of are looking forward to, the amount of time that opposing teams are going to have to put in on preparing for each quarterback."
Yes. I mean, I think that's one of the things that they're probably, you know, looking at. You've got to prepare for Trey coming in and running a certain amount of packages with his running ability. And then you've got Jimmy. And, yeah, to make a defensive coordinator have to think about how they're going to do it. So I expect that Garoppolo will start and that you'll get Trey Lance in a little bit here and there. I don't know that I buy this. You know, who was it said yesterday, Trey Lance going to be starting by a certain point?
Mike Sando
Mike Sando, that's what it was. I don't know. If Jimmy Garoppolo's 5-1 and they're in first place or tied for first place, you're really going to take Jimmy Garoppolo? It makes no sense. Like, you can't say that. You can't make that prediction unless you're predicting that Garoppolo's going to fail.
Yeah.
And they're not going to win games. Like, you've got to almost, they go hand in hand. You're not going to take Jimmy Garoppolo out and put in Trey Lance if they're winning football. I don't even care how good, if they're winning football games, it's going to be really hard to do that.
Well, and that's the thing about Jimmy G. You can say whatever you want about him, but his track record in San Francisco is that
a lot of games.
When he is healthy and plays, they win. I'm not saying the reason why they win is because of Jimmy G, but they seem to win. And so I think you bring a great point up. And also, I'm just not buying Trey Lance in general. I mean, I think out of all of these rookie quarterbacks, and I don't think this is an underestimation, he has the biggest learning curve coming into the NFL.
He didn't play last. Played one game last year.
He played one game last year.
Played one game last year, threw, I don't know, 20 passes, 2 touchdowns, 1 pick. I don't even think he threw for 200 yards in the game. I'd have to look it up. He played one game last season. Like, come on, he can't be ready.
And I don't mean to besmirch FCS football, but he also played at a lower level.
North Dakota State.
It's not like this is a guy coming from the SEC where he sees NFL-caliber opponents throughout his collegiate games week in and week out. Yeah, North Dakota State is the premier FCS program, but that's a big jump from the NFL. And so I'm not sold that Trey Lance is just going to come in and set the world on fire whenever he gets some action for the 49ers.
I don't care as much about that. I mean, we've seen, where did Josh Allen play? Wyoming?
Yeah.
I mean, like, come on.
Oh,
like,
yeah, no, I mean, Tony Romo was an FCS guy. Carson Wentz, an FCS guy. I mean, it's happened.
We've seen plenty of guys come in and be able to have success not having the same level of competition as some of their other guys.
It's fair enough. But how many of those guys played one game in their previous college season?
I think that hurts. I do. I think that hurts. Listen, if San Francisco wants to play Trey Lance, I think that's better for the Cardinals. I mean, be honest. If I'm a Cardinal fan, play Trey Lance. Play the kid. Let him get his brains beat in. Trade Jimmy Garoppolo. Cut Jimmy Garoppolo. If I'm a for the Cardinals, I would right now, if you said to me right now, who would you rather face, Garoppolo or Trey Lance? Give me Trey Lance.
Yeah.
Like, I'd rather face Trey Lance.
Absolutely.
Garoppolo's a veteran. He knows the league. This kid's, he's raw. I would rather face it. Even though he poses that threat to run, I would rather face him right now than Jimmy Garoppolo.
Coming up next on the Burns and Gambo Show, the Arizona Cardinals preseason is officially over. You might be saying, wait, I thought they had one more game. Not so much anymore. We'll fill you in on all of the details, what's going on with the Cardinals and New Orleans. That's coming up next here on 98.7 FM.